Hello, this is your weekly podcast, The Africa Climate Conversations. I'm your host, Sophie Mbokwa. This is the Financing Change in Africa series, a conversation made possible by a collaboration between the African Development Bank, the Climate Investment Funds, and the Africa Climate Conversations. In Africa, forest accounts for 23% of its planned area. Africa is also home to the largest proportion of forest-dependent subsistence households globally, with more than half of the continent population relying directly or indirectly on the forest for livelihoods. Ines Angulo, the Forest Investment Program Coordinator at the Climate Investment Funds, says Africa is the continent with the highest annual rate net forest loss at 3.9 million hectares in the last decade. The forest loss has been increasing steadily since 1990. How is the Forest Investment Program working with African countries to manage forest loss and provide sustainable livelihood to communities dependent on them? Here is Ines.
The main purpose of the FIP is to support developing countries' REDD+ efforts by providing financing for readiness reforms and investments to help the countries to adapt to the impacts of climate change on forests and to also contribute to multiple benefits such as biodiversity conservation, rural livelihoods enhancements, for example. The FIP has an active portfolio in 13 countries around the world, and it has an indicative funding allocation of $612 million for a total of 50 projects, and 88 of that funding is already under implementation.
And out of this project, how many of these projects are in Africa?
So if we analyze the FIP portfolio by region, we can see that the main beneficiary has been Africa with 44% of the funding, approximately $270 million. And in terms of impact, the FIP portfolio in Africa will result in a reduction of 33.8 million tons of CO2 equivalent from nearly 2.5 million hectares of forests. Mm-hmm. I think that one of the main characteristics of the FIP and the CIF in general, the CIF, is its reliance in country ownership. It is through this highly participatory process, which involves the government, the private sector, indigenous peoples, local communities, academia, civil society, that each participating pilot country develops an investment plan where it defines how they're going to use their allocated funding. And based on that, about 40% of the FIP portfolio focuses on landscape approaches. And that means that we are funding activities that tackle the main drivers of deforestation, such as agriculture, for example. Mm-hmm. And other areas that we fund are sustainable forest management, capacity building and institutional strengthening, and also improving the livelihoods of indigenous people and local communities. In Africa, forest cover accounts for 23% of its land area. And Africa at the same time is home to the largest proportion of forest-dependent subsistence households in the world, with more than half of the continent's population relying directly or indirectly in forests for livelihoods. Africa as well is the continent with the highest annual rate of net forest loss during the past decade, with a total of 3.9 million hectares. And this is due mainly to over-reliance on wood fuel, to agricultural expansion, urban growth, infrastructure development, mining, for example. And the continent's rate of loss has been increasing steadily since 1990. So therefore, the challenge for Africa and forest sector is how to reduce the fast rate of forest depletion, and at the same time, how to manage forests and woodlands to provide sustainable livelihoods to the growing population that depends on them. And since this podcast is about climate change, in terms of this, deforestation and forest degradation account for roughly 30% of Africa's greenhouse gas emissions. So forest must clearly play an important role in the region's efforts to limit climate change. Mm. And countries have already acknowledged this. I read an analysis of the nationally determined contributions, or NDCs, from African countries, and they show that most of the countries included land use change and forestry as a priority sector for mitigation. So there's a lot of work to be done.
And in terms of forest protection, you find that there's a lot of other areas that are also involved in terms of when it talks about land and different other sectors that, of course, you find sectors like mining and energy that probably require a lot of land that forces or interferes with the forests. To what extent is integrating forest protection and land for different other sectors important for achieving success?
This is a crucial point. We cannot talk about forests in a silo. Forests happen in areas that have other competing interests, as you well mentioned. And in the case of Africa, of course, agriculture is an important one. And maybe I can share a couple of examples from FIP investments that are under implementation. In Africa, we are operating in six different countries, in Burkina Faso, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, in Congo Republic, Ivory Coast, Mozambique, and Ghana. Mm-hmm. And I'll mention a couple of examples. In Burkina Faso, the FIP funding was really catalytic in supporting the development of the country's red strategy and in positioning the landscape approach, which is what we are discussing now, not looking only at forests, but more in a multi-sectoral perspective, as an integral part of the government's rural development agenda. The FIP support that includes $40 million is helping to create a coordinated REDPAS strategy that is piloting these innovative approaches to limiting deforestation and forest degradation. For example, before the FIP, the Ministry of Environment in Burkina would only manage classified forests under its direct responsibility. But now the government is designing policies to address all forested areas as an integral part of the rural landscape and is engaging multiple actors with a stronger focus on land use planning for the first time. For us, successful FIP projects are not only good for climate and environment, but to ensure their sustainability. I think we must also provide benefits for the people. Mm-hmm. And we, in this case of Burkina Faso, we undertook an impact evaluation of one of the projects implemented by the African Development Bank. And the results of this evaluation clearly show that people that participated in the payment for environmental services scheme for reforestation that was set up by the project experienced less food insecurity. 6 months after receiving the payment, for example, the households reported a reduction in moderate food insecurity by 35% and a reduction in severe food insecurities by 60% in comparison to the control group. This is significant. That shows that you can have activities that tackle both both climate and environment and poverty and development at the same time. And that has to do a lot with the different drivers of deforestation that compete in the use of these lands. Mm. And in Ghana, many of the activities that are being piloted with $75 million funding from the FIP have the potential, for example, to be scaled up at the national level. And these include a tree tenure system that provides farmers with the opportunity to benefit economically from the trees in their land, promoting shade-grown cocoa that increases production yields and at the same time increases forest covers, strengthening participation of local communities in managing their natural resources through a creation of community resource management areas, and also restoration of land that has been degraded by mining activities. Another example in Mozambique, the $28.5 million in FIP financing focuses on integrated landscape management programs, activities that can contribute directly to the country's REDPAS strategy that include promoting systematic community land delimitation and individual titling that is gender responsive, for example, or establishing agroforest resistance schemes, and also piloting a performance-based scheme for the promotion of planted forests by small and medium landholders and local communities. So as you see these examples, I am not discussing 100% only forest-related activities, but mm-hmm. it's important to really see that the main issue here is a cause of the drivers of deforestation that we need to take into account.
Absolutely. And I'm listening to you speak and I'm thinking it. Forest protection covers a wide array of sectors, basically. And one of the things that you find in many African countries is that you find the policies are not harmonized. You say, for example, in the agriculture department, forest department, and the energy department, does this project work with governments to ensure that there is harmonization of policies to ensure that different sectors work in tandem with each other?
I think this is the main challenge that we have. And how we really tackle this is, well, first we have to be realistic that we are discussing problems that are very complex mm-hmm. and difficult. So mm-hmm. How we tackle this is really through the nature of how the CIF business model operates, which is, I think, unique among the climate funds. We use a country-led programmatic approach. So instead of providing funding on a project-by-project basis, mm-hmm. the countries that participate in the FIP were provided with $250,000 to develop an investment plan that aligns with the national programs and the ambitions on sustainable development and climate change. So this is the opportunity for countries to really decide how they're going to be tackling these main drivers of deforestation and degradation. And this is a process, it's a very highly participatory process where we expect countries to not only be working with the, let's say, Ministry of Forestry or Ministry of Environment, but we want this to be an opportunity for all relevant ministries to come together and see this issue in a more coordinated manner. Another issue that's important for in terms of how we work is that we have a consideration of transformational change at the design phase. So these issues of drivers of deforestation, barriers, need to be considered from the start.
Yeah.
It also, another issue that makes a difference, I think, is that we provide large scale, flexible and unpredictable funding. And this really makes it possible to develop often a first of a kind projects that take into account the changing conditions in the countries and markets. So flexibility mm-hmm. is also important.
Yeah.
And another characteristic that's important is that we deliver our financing through the multiple coordinated multilateral development banks, which work together to support this implementation of the investment packaging. So being able to leverage co-finance and engaging other stakeholders like private sector, for example, is very key for us to achieve an impact in the long term.
Yeah. I'm wondering in terms of commercial forests and the role they play. And I think one of the things that I've seen with commercial tree plantations is the species that you find in most cases that will be planted. For example, eucalyptus that sometimes are planted in the wrong areas, especially in the water, ends up being a problem, especially in terms of the water. And we know with the climate change, it's projected that just depending on a country, the level of water that will be available for the future, climate will impact the water availability. What role does commercial forest play in implementing this particular project?
Well, we recently funded a study with the African Development Bank that they were exploring actually this issue of what's the potential that forest plantations can play in the African continent. And they found that there clearly is a very big potential for that development in the continent, but the barriers are still quite serious. I already mentioned that, for example, land tenure is an issue with the REDD+ issues, and it's also a very important issue to consider in terms of plantations. Yeah. Us as a climate fund, we are definitely interested in plantations that not only provide these economic livelihoods, but we need to make sure that we are funding what we call triple wins. So yes, plantations can be good maybe in the short or longer term for the company, but if, like you mentioned, if they do a plantation of eucalyptus in an area that it's doesn't have the necessary or the adequate amounts of water or other resources, it can in the long term have a very negative impact in the area. So for us, it is crucial that all investments related to plantations need to take into account not only environmental conditions, but that they also work to ensure that there's equitable, let's say, benefits for local communities. For us, this is a crucial part that needs to be considered when discussing the issue of plantations. Well, really not only in Africa, but at a global level.
Ines, your final words.
In relation to the FIP, one thing that I think it's worth mentioning is the forward-thinking decision made at the start of a FIP back in 2010 to not only focus on tropical forests, because many times when we're discussing climate change and forestry, people directly just talk about tropical forests. But we also support countries with other forest types. And in the case of Africa, this includes dry forest in Burkina Faso and savanna ecosystems in Mozambique, for example. Mm-hmm. And another innovation that I really wanted to highlight is the dedicated grant mechanism, or DGM, which is a one-of-a-kind program that was designed and led by representatives of the indigenous people's groups and local communities in the FIP countries. Mm-hmm. This the DGM was approved in 2011 and is a standalone $80 million funding window that provides the indigenous peoples and local communities with direct access to international climate funding. Mm-hmm. This is really innovative. And for example, the DGM is supporting an establishment of non-timber forest product enterprises for indigenous peoples, the participation in land tenure reform, management of conservation areas, and for example, funding for local tree planting initiatives. And to me, most importantly, it has already achieved substantial results in almost 168,000 hectares and has already benefited more than 238,000 people so far. Initiatives like this really need to be scaled up. Yeah. And the final point I want to make is that the CIF or FIP, it has a strong focus on learning by doing. And we have more than 10 years of experience and lessons learned that have helped us to develop new programs for which we are currently trying to raise resources for.
Yeah.
One of them is the Nature, People and Climate Investment Program that will allow us to continue to pilot innovative projects related to landscape level natural resource management and to nature-based solutions. And I think it's precisely at this time that investing in nature can truly help the African countries to sustainably recover from the pandemic and at the same time promote sustainable rural development that can benefit the most vulnerable populations that depend on natural resources for their livelihoods.
Absolutely, especially given the COVID-19 pandemic.
Exactly. The link between COVID-19 is very clear, not only because of the origin, but because of the impact that it's having on the most vulnerable populations. And we need to take advantage of this situation really to rethink of how we are thinking of development and how we want our future to be. And in the case of Africa, natural resource management and nature in general really needs to be taken as a priority.
Mm. And that is the future FIP is actually thinking of moving forward, right?
Exactly. Not right. Just focusing on forests, but more on nature and nature-based solutions in general.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ines.
No, thank you, Sophie.
That was Ines Angulo, the Forest Investments Program Coordinator at the Climate Investment Fund. Now, in Ghana, the Global Forest Watch indicates that Ghana's forest once covered a third of its 24 million hectares landmass. But in 2020, the country lost 136,000 hectares of natural forest, equivalent to over 30 million tons of CO2 emissions. The Forest Investment Program has been funding a forest investment program in Ghana, working with the local communities and stakeholders to reduce deforestation while ensuring forest-dependent communities benefit from the natural resource. Valerie Fami Nazar, the manager for the Plantations Unit at the Forestry Commission of Ghana, tells us more about the project achievements and lessons learned.
The Ghana Investment Plan was approved in November 2012. And that secured Ghana a total funding of $50 million. The investment plan had three main projects, which was disbursed through the African Development Bank, the World Bank, and the International Finance Corporation. Mm. So we have three projects running, and the African Development Bank project that we are talking about today is one of them. We received $10 million for the African Development Bank project, which retained the engaging local communities in Red Plus, and also on enhancing carbon stocks. And so when I make reference to ELSA Plus, it is a project two of the Forest Investment Program in Ghana. So we received $10 million from SIF, and then the African Development Bank also added a grant of $5 million. It was supposed to end in December 2019. So we received 1 year extension. Mm-hmm. And the project just ended in December 2020. So ELSA Plus had the main objective to increase carbon stocks and poverty reduction in the off-reserve areas of the high forest zone of the country. And we have to do that by engaging communities in land management approaches that generate direct financial and environmental benefits to all stakeholders. The four main components of the project were the community restoration of degraded areas, mm-hmm. where we were looking at small to medium scale community members, farmers, tree growers who were interested in restoration of the degraded areas in off reserve. Mm-hmm. And then the component two was promoting sustainable cocoa and agroforestry systems that are climate smart, mm-hmm. and environmentally responsible, mm-hmm. agroforestry techniques. And then the third component was the community alternative livelihoods and capacity building. Mm-hmm. The project was off reserve. In Ghana, we have on reserve, we have about 18% of the entire country, which constitute the forest reserves and the national parks. And the remainder is the off reserve areas, which are owned and managed by individuals, chiefs, stoles, communities. So at the end of the project in December 2020, the major outputs included about 38,000 hectares for forest plantations established across the landscape, thus reducing pressure on the forest ecosystem. And then we have the trees density also increased to about 26,000 hectares of cocoa and agricultural farms. And then we also have approximately 1,000 farmers who have been supported to engage in forest-based enterprises like soap making using cocoa husks. Some have done, some now have mushroom that they are rearing, beekeeping, and then community tree nurseries where the communities produce the tree seedlings and then they sell and they plant some, they sell some, and all these are to help to reduce poverty in the forest fringe communities across the landscape.
All right. How many in terms of the communities have benefited, local communities?
When we look at the communities in the off-reserve areas, we have approximately 40 districts. And then we have 12,000 beneficiaries across 40 districts within the Brown Ahafo and the Western region. And we have dealt with them in community groups. So you might have one community that have one group doing livelihoods, one group doing tree registration, and then tree planting, and then the other groups involved in woodlot establishment, some in tree plantations. So approximately 12,000 beneficiaries from more than 50 communities.
When you're working with local communities, you find also like in terms of forest in within countries, is that there's a huge percentage of it that is actually community owned or within people's farms. How have you worked with communities in terms of encouraging them to plant more trees within their farms? Have you planted different kind of species like fruit trees to ensure that they can see the benefits basically of planting more trees on their farms?
Thank you very much. One of the unique things we have done under this project has been to work with Ghana Cocoa Board and also Ministry of Food and Agriculture, mainly the frontline staff at the district and the regions, because we are all working in the same landscape. Farmers have a number of options to put their land to, and planting trees in people's own land does not come easy because of the long term of the trees. So Cocoa Research Institute have indicated some trees that are good for the cocoa systems. That are good. So there are a list of species, indigenous species that have been planted across the landscape. In some areas, it has been in agricultural farms, there have been species other than timber trees, where they have been supported to improve their productivity for their maize, for their cereals, and not so much of fruit trees. But whatever vegetables and food crops that they are involved in, they have received support from Crops Research Institute and Soil Research Institute under this project to improve the farming systems and to enhance soil carbon in their farms. So it has been both the trees, indigenous trees planted in the farming systems, and then some will have cereals, will just do the trees to do their boundary planting. Some will have a few of the species that they would like to use the bark for medicine or something that they will plant in their farms. But then it has been mainly the promotion of tree species in the farms. One major challenge has been the incentives, like you rightly said. There are so many juicy incentives for people to plant cashew and rubber and other things in the landscape. So we had a tough time trying to sensitize the communities and ensuring that they understand the short and medium term impact of the trees they are planting, such that they are able to choose between either they do the cashew, they do the rubber, or they do the forest trees. And one unique thing, once again, that we also did here was a modified tonja system with the Forestry Commission is working on, where the communities for the first 3 or 4 years until the canopy closes, they are able to plant their food crops among the trees. So they harvest their food crops for the first 4 years. So they have short-term income for that. And then when the canopy is closed, they maintain and wait till maturity, which is sometimes 10 years, 12 years. And the project supported them with beehives and the other livelihoods that I mentioned earlier, the mushrooms, such that they are able to have medium-term benefits whilst they wait for the trees to mature. And the good thing is when the trees mature under the modified tonja system, they have a 40% share in the trees. The Forestry Commission also have 40% share. Entire community have 5% of social responsibility. The landowners also have 15% share of the value of the tree.
The project came to an end in 2020, right?
Yes, December last year. Yes.
December last year. So what is the plan for maybe phase two or maybe scaling up the project elsewhere?
Yes, a number of interventions were implemented. And I'll just quickly run you through it. Then when I talk about those that we are scaling up, we have model plantations that have been established has demonstration plots across the regions where people can go and learn about it. Mm-hmm. We have the modified Tanja plots that we spoke about. Mm-hmm. And then we have the wood lots for charcoal production, mm-hmm. where communities who engage in charcoal production have been supported to establish their own wood lots. Mm-hmm. And they have been supported with efficient kilns where they can maximize the use from the wood. Mm-hmm. And then we have done intensive wildfire sensitization and education, because that is one of the major threats of deforestation in Ghana at the moment. Mm-hmm. And the communities were supported to prepare community wildfire plans, mm-hmm. very simplified plans that they are able to work with the district assemblies, where they know that whenever there is a trigger, the chain of custody, how they are going to ensure that they reduce fire. And so far, since the project started, we have not eliminated it totally, but wildfires have reduced. Mm-hmm. With the fire service, the Forestry Commission, Mufakuku Board, and we have trained fire volunteer squads in all the regions. We had them already, but they have been reactivated and their capacity built. They have been given, with the support of the project, given equipment for fire suppression and all that. Yeah. So it has reduced, and we are hoping that it will be sustained. Mm. And then the climate smart agricultural lands, where cocoa farmers have incorporated trees in their farms. And then there were some unique sacred groves. Sacred groves are patches of forest in the off-reserve areas, which are managed by the communities and their traditional authorities. Mm-hmm. And the project has supported 10 of them to write management plan for these communities. So although originally they were using taboos, now they are going to be supported with the guidelines to be able to these, so that we avoid deforestation in these patches of forest that are still there. So then when we come to the scaling up, first of all, the modified Tanja system, which has already been implemented across the country. Some pilots and some work has been done by the Forestry Commission already. There was a break, but then the project has reactivated the importance and the need for the communities as well as the Forestry Commission, because we work as partners with the communities to rehabilitate our degraded forest. So that is going to continue for a long time to come. And it is in our national plantation strategy. It's one of the strategies for landscape restoration that we have adopted. So it's going to go on. And then the wood lots for sustainable harvest of fuel wood and charcoal production is also one of the things that is going to be sustained, because the trees that are no more there like they used to be in the past, because of degradation and deforestation. So if you are into charcoal production or for sales, now you have the techniques and the know-how to establish your own woodlot where you can rely on. So we are rehabilitating the land, but also we have these species which coppice. They harvest and then it coppices back. So it's like the sustained use of the tree species for woodlots. And then the shade lava and cocoa and the soil carbon enhancement technologies. Like I said, we worked with the Soil Research Institute, Crops Research Institute of Ghana, Cocoa Board and MOFA. And because these institutions are already in place, these things are going to be adopted in the annual plans. Then they are going to train more people. And then now the farmers who have seen the outcome, especially those in the agricultural farms where the productivity has slightly increased, they know that when they continue to get better yields, and then other farmers are learning from them through cross-farm visits and other things to ensure that these systems are sustained. And then the livelihoods have also caught on very well with the farmers, because they are using the local products in their communities to produce these, the soap from the cocoa husk, and then the beehives, they are producing honey, and then the mushroom are things they use daily. They will go to the forest and harvest the honey. but now you have a hive, and that is really catching on. We are at a point where they will have to be properly mobilized and supported so that they can increase their value chain, process it appropriately, so that they can get a niche market for the product that they are distributing. So these are a few of the things that can be seen. And with the wildfire thing now, with the guide, the simplified community guides, the fire volunteer squads reactivated, they are going to be sustained in the districts and in the community.
Valerie, what's the lesson learned?
There's no way. One of our major drivers was the wildfire. What the extensive wildfire campaigns and the formation of the fire volunteer squads and all that have really gingered the communities, all the stakeholders, the fire service at the district level. And so the lessons we have learned there is that to be able to avoid deforestation, we'll have to sustain activities of these groups and to ensure that they will be able to prevent wildfires. Otherwise, all the gains that have been made under the project will not be consolidated. And so we have efforts put in place now, and it is our responsibility to sustain.
To what extent has forest fires been threatening forests within Ghana?
Yes, every year we have, you know, the deforestation rate of the country is about 3.2 per year. 35% of that can be attributed to wildfire. Reduction in the space at which farmers clear forests to establish their new farms have also been curtailed a bit because we have increased productivity per hectare. So hopefully, instead of every year moving to a new site, doing the slash and burn and all that, will be curtailed, not entirely, but reduced in a way that we will be able to make more gains in the office every year. One of the major lessons to have been the bridging the gap between policy, practice, and research. We're able to do that under this project, where the researchers brought in their technologies, the farmers were there willing to adapt and learn. And then the various institutes, the Cocoa Board, MUFA, all the frontline staff were engaged. So we have built capacity of these, all of us, to be able to apply technologies that have been researched into and have been proven to help in reducing deforestation and degradation.
All right, Valerie, we have to leave it there, but I appreciate you taking time to take us through the FIP project in Ghana. Thank you so much.
Thank you too. It was my pleasure, Sophie.
That was Valerie Faminaza, the manager for the Plantations Unit at the Forestry Commission of Ghana, telling us more about the Forest Investment Funding Project in Ghana. Remember, the Financing Change in Africa series is made possible by a collaboration with the African Development Bank, the Climate Investment Funds, and the Africa Climate Conversations. Talk to us via info@africaclimateconversations.com. But until next week on Tuesday, kwaheri, my name is Sophie Mbogwa.